What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. And today, we are joined by a very special guest, Locked On Falcons' own Aaron Freeman. Aaron, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, it was a very different time. I think the last time I was on this podcast, I think the Falcons were 2-0, and everything was looking great, you know? And it's been all downhill since then, so.
If you'd have kept coming on the show every week, maybe we would have made the playoffs.
That's right. Back when hope spring was, you know, springing eternal, and until reality fully set in. Jonathan, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Trying to keep up with all the news and rumors and scuttlebutt and all that jazz with regards to the coaching hire, but. It's been an interesting time.
It has been that. And I guess without much further ado, we might as well just get into it. Yeah. Well, as you alluded to, Jonathan, the search is still ongoing. This has got to be about one of the most extensive searches that I can remember. So that the Falcons have done, at least publicly, that we have known. I mean, now we're up to what, about 15 candidates, with closing in on like 8 or 9 of them having second interviews scheduled. Aaron, can you remember any like more extensive search than this one?
No, I can't. I feel like maybe in past searches, but you know, obviously I don't remember all the details. Maybe they got up to like 8 candidates or something like that. But I think some of that is owed to kind of the changes the NFL has sort of undergone the last couple of years to try to make it so that teams are looking more at more people. As you know, I think kind of the cynical person in me, as a backlash to some lawsuits that the NFL has gotten for unfair hiring practices, and they're like, okay, like, you know, nothing gets the NFL to act quicker than $1 million or $1 billion lawsuit.
Nothing gets anybody like business wise to act quicker than, oh, you were going to try to interfere with like us making money, or like cost us a ton of money. Yeah. That is a quick way to get a response. I think it's good, like in a sense of whether like it was something I was watching Jonathan go back and forth with somebody on Twitterverse about, whether you consider it a legitimate or not, I mean, at least you're getting the experience. You're getting to know, at least to see a different side of an organization, and knowing in the future whether, hey, it's an organization I actually want to be a part of or not. Then you can start going down like the word of mouth, you know, trail. If you get, you know, treated like, if you feel like it's a phony interview, then guess what? That's going to spread around. You know, and whether it changes quickly, if nothing else, it will change, you know, as far as, you know, people not wanting to take interviews with particular organizations, if these things start getting out there. So I like the broad net that the Falcons are casting. It seems like they are turning over every stone possible. Somebody mentioned, it was Alberto says, at this point, Aaron should put in for an interview. Seems like Nelson saw something and didn't want a part of it. But yeah, it seems like everybody's getting an interview. I'm kind of waiting for mine to come down the pipe, but yeah, maybe they don't like the, you know, bearded chunky dude. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
They might not like me then,
you know. You got a different aesthetic going on there, so it can very stoic appearance. So so I guess before we get like real deep into it, who's the top of Aaron Freeman's list? Like if you're like, this is the guy that if they hire this dude, I'd be like over the moon.
To be honest with you, I don't know if I have that one guy where I'm just like fist pumping, or if it's one guy, it's multiple guys. Like basically my favorite guy is anybody but Belichick is kind of where I'm at with it. But if I was to sort of sit here and narrow it down to like three, it's probably Ben Johnson, Raheem Morris, and Mike McDonald would be to me the three that I would look at and say, okay, like I feel like there's a lot of good behind these hires, and I can get behind any one of those three hires. But, you know, I guess I guess for me, like, going circling back to Raheem Morris, I think would be a great story for the Falcons. And Raheem Morris personally, I think I've been saying for many years that I think he deserves another opportunity to be a head coach in his NFL. And, you know, I don't count his 11 games as the interim coach for the Atlanta Falcons as a true second opportunity, but I think he did about as good an opportunity in that under those circumstances as it probably anybody could. And I think that's a testament to what he could do given sort of a full arsenal to sort of take over that head job.
Yeah, no, I agree. Raheem Morris, I can't necessarily quantify it, you know, because anytime you go and, you know, look at, okay, his time in Tampa wasn't great, wasn't like stellar, but you really have to dive into what was going on in the organization at the time, the talent level, whatever. You can say, okay, well, it was 11 games here, wasn't like, you know, stellar. He won four games. Inherited an 0-5 team at the time that was, you could argue, on getting to where it was on being like void of talent. Like guys were being long in the tooth. And but he's done well out at you know, LA. He's gotten experience with a lot of different like coaches, coaching staffs, coaching styles. So he's the one that I think would is just interesting because I would like to see what kind of staff he would put together. Let's see here.
Yeah, like as far like two of those guys, McDonald, I think you said Ben Johnson was the other one.
Yeah.
Like those two are definitely in my, if I had to give a top three, those two are definitely in my top three. Raheem Morris, he's not in my top three, but I'll say this, if he does get hired as the Falcons head coach, I would not be disappointed at all. But my top three would be Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, and Mike McDonald. Like those three guys are, and then right outside of that is like the Raheem Morrises, the Anthony Weavers. Those guys are kind of the next tier for me.
Yeah, it's an interesting like interesting search that's going on. Our good friend, I use that term loosely, Fred Butts. He says Belichick is the best choice. We'll get into old hood. And then Willie Dock, our buddy, says blessings to UMP4P and comrade in arms, Aaron Freeman. You both have been lighting it up with the content. Thank you so much for what y'all do. Yeah. I mean, we do it because, you know, we enjoy it. And what else would we be doing on a Tuesday night? Maybe watching prospect. I don't know. I would be doing something as equally annoying to my wife, I'm assured. But the interesting thing that I have is like, you have two camps going on right now. And you're like, oh, JR, you have these two camps every time. But it seems like Blank truly wants somebody with experience. You get that with, you know, with the Jim Harbaughs, the Belichicks, the Mike Vrabel, and even, you know, to an extent like Raheem Morris. And then you get the hot up and coming names, the Slowicks, the Ben Johnsons, the Mike McDonalds, and, you know, those guys, Anthony Weavers. And so it becomes down to, you know, two schools of thought, which has been reported this week that it may seem like the front office and Blank are kind of split. Like, Aaron, I know you've read this stuff. So, what do you read into the odds of Blank and the front office?
Yeah, I think Blank's perspective makes total sense to me, right? You know, I know a lot of people talk about his age. I don't think age has anything to do with it. I think it's just simple. The fact that the Falcons have not had a winning season in 6 years. That the last time the Falcons went this long without winning was in the 1980s, right? Mm-hmm. They've never gone more than 3 years without having a winning season under Arthur Blank. And he wants someone that can come in and basically snap that streak, right? And so I think that leads to him valuing certainly someone like a Bill Belichick. And I certainly think a case can be made for Bill Belichick being one of many people, but certainly given he has the track record to understand why someone would look at Bill Belichick as the sort of answer that can solve that problem. What I'll say is I'm not one of these people that thinks hiring a first-time head coach is a is an issue. I tend to think that the Falcons hiring process over the last 20 years has been pretty good. I think by any objective measure that you can measure success, wins and losses, the fact that the Falcons have been to three conference championships games, which three quarters of the NFL can't say, in that period of time, tells me that the Falcons are mostly doing things right. And their current issues are not related to some sort of losing culture or any of the sort of things that people talk about when they criticize this organization. It's just, they've made some mistakes, right? They, you know, coming off of their Super Bowl success, they kind of, you know, sort of stagnated on a roster standpoint for the next couple of years, thinking that they had sort of assembled a Super Bowl caliber team. And unfortunately, you know, they didn't necessarily have the coaching to sort of achieve that at that point in time, in part due to, you know, questionable decisions when it came to who was going to be offensive coordinator, questionable roster decisions, all that stuff and more. And so I think when you just sort of try to point the blame at one person at the top of the organization, that is the root of all their problems. I just think that's just kind of people scapegoating things. And so I look at, you know, if the Falcons want to continue to hire first-time head coaches, again, with the exception of Andy Reid, who are the hot coaches in the NFL? They were all people that had no head coaching experience, and that's going to continue to be the case throughout NFL history. Like, you know, I'll be fascinated if we ever get to a point where you're ranking your top five head coaches and they're all sort of retread coaches or anything like that. I don't think we're ever going to get there.
It was something that I'm glad you bring that up, because it was something that I meant to take a look at, and I ain't gonna lie, I just got lazy this afternoon when I got home from work. But I wanted to look at, like, because right off the top of my head, guys who were retreads being successful, you know, like right afterwards, like, isn't really like high, and it's probably because there's not a lot of them, right? You immediately come to mind Ron Rivera, Frank Reich.
John Fox.
Yeah, John Fox. Even Mike McCarthy. Like, you could say, oh, Mike McCarthy is probably the most successful out of all of them, you know, having three 12-win seasons, but you see their, you know, their playoff history. And so,
I mean, you said the most successful is Belichick. I mean, he was with the Browns first, and then
right.
And then went to the Jets for a day. Said, "Yeah,
for a cup of coffee."
Yeah, and then went to New England. But and Pete Carroll's another one that has been successful.
But see, Pete Carroll went to the college ranks and then came back. Like, I almost, in a, there's a part of me that almost views that as a reset. It'll be interesting because it really sounds like Harbaugh is getting really close to landing with the Chargers. So it'll be interesting to see what his second stint in the NFL can produce. Because, I mean, he's won everywhere he's been. So when it was something I thought about and put out on Twitter earlier, it's like there's that old saying, you don't pay players for what they've done. Like, or you shouldn't, like, if, you know, paying somebody for their past performances as far as playing goes. But that seems to be what we do with coaches, right? At least in a sense of this time around, right? We're, for our organization, it's, oh, well, let's go get Belichick because he's won six rings or he's been to, you know, 10 Super Bowls. So let's go get him because obviously he knows what he's doing. There's some merit to that. You know, obviously he knows what he's doing. But there is also some merit saying, well, since Brady walked out and went down to Tampa, he hasn't been able to rebuild it. So is that on Belichick? I've heard some from other people, you know, from sports media types up there in New England, that these last few years haven't necessarily been all Belichick. He's been handcuffed more. As Nick is pointing out here, he's 28-39 without Brady. So it would be, I don't know. It's interesting to have that debate, because there is the fact that in his tenure, even with New England, like, his drafting has been putrid. You know, that's unobjectively, you know, their first round talent has been bad. N'Keal Harry, anybody? but then you say, okay, well, his drafting's been bad, but his defenses have always been good, so he's able to get really good play out of, you know, subpar talent, so to speak. So It's weird and interesting to talk past success. How does that project in the future when it comes to coaching? Because then you talk about guys like Slowick who come to mind, who, how much success do you lay at Slowick's feet versus CJ Stroud's talent and ability? Mm-hmm. You know, so, well, I guess I'll ask you that, Aaron, like how much of that do you think is Slowick?
I don't have an answer for you, JR. I think with Slowick, you know, we'll have an answer in a couple of years, right? When after he's a head coach, right? But like, you could look at it. I think in a lot of ways, Slowick is getting a boost because he's the next in the Shanahan tree, and that tree has been very successful. I think he's getting a boost from CJ Stroud having a very productive rookie season. And obviously, Bobby Slowick had something to do with that, clearly. Right. But how much he had to do with it? Could he have done that with a lesser quarterback, you know, and potentially
done that with Bryce Young?
Yeah. You know, and so, and then when you look at, like, you look at the Mike McDaniels and the Matt LaFleurs that have sort of come out of that Shanahan tree, and they've all been sort of people that had limited play calling experience. Like Mike McDaniel had none before he got the job in Miami. Matt LaFleur had one season of calling plays in Tennessee prior to Arthur Smith being elevated for that job. And it was a pretty lackluster year. And then you look at, you know, how Mike McDaniel's offense kind of has revolutionized the NFL this past year. And Matt LaFleur, you know, has done one of the better coaching jobs this season in developing Jordan Love, but you wouldn't have been able to make that bet based off of their prior work. And so I think in a lot of ways, people just, you just kind of do the same thing with Bobby Slowick. Can you just kind of fill in the blanks in the same way and say, well, he could be the next one. And so that leads you to like Bobby Slowick. And again, I like Bobby Slowick. He'd be number four on my sort of coaching ranking. So like, I wouldn't have any problem with the Falcons hiring him, but you are kind of making a gamble or a bet on him based off of fairly little information.
Yeah, that's the deal. Like I listened to, you know, it was oddly enough, a clip that Steve Weiss put out today when they were talking to Slowick after the Falcons game, that, you know, talking about, you know, CJ wanting to change that play and, or, you know, run the double move to ended up going for a big shot to Dalton Schultz there towards the end of the game to get that touchdown. And it's like, oh, well, how do you give this guy the freedom? And it's, and he talks about the relationship, and that's what, you know, that you have a newer generation of players coming out as to, because that's one of the things I worry about with the Patriot way, bringing the Patriot way out of Foxborough, is it's not worked anywhere outside of Foxborough. And you say, well, you know, JR, everybody's who's tried to do it isn't Belichick, you know. So could Belichick bring it out of Foxborough? It was like, I don't know. I don't know if that works anymore, you know, with players nowadays, especially when you hear a guy like, you know, Slowick talking about the relationship that he was able to build and foster in one training camp with, you know, CJ Stroud. Let's see.
Yeah. Oh, like, go ahead. I saw this a bunch early in the, I haven't seen it like, you know, lately, but early in the, you know, just after the off season, everybody was like, you know, this was, I'd say it was like 80-20 Stroud over Slowick. I'm like, you have no way to know that. Like, honestly, like you have no way. Like, do I think Stroud would probably have been a good rookie quarterback in other places? Sure. Maybe. The guy's got all the talent in the world, but we've seen guys that come out of the college ranks that are supremely talented. And if that coaching is not there, not necessarily to coach him up in the traditional sense, but to know, like, what are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? What are plays that he's really good at? What are plays he's not so good at? If the plays he's not so good at, how can we tweak them to take advantage of those strengths? So a lot of how that, and then, you know, calling the play, the during game day, actually making the calls and getting a feel for the game and seeing like what's working, what's not, all those things can go towards CJ Stroud being a successful quarterback that day. And then, you know, taking that and putting his athleticism and just his talent on top of all that makes it even better. But you just have no way of knowing. And again, we won't know until, like, if, you know, Slowik is going to be a head coach next year, whether it's with Atlanta, somewhere else, more than likely he will be a head coach somewhere.
I can, I can easily see a team thinking that he can come in and do what he did with Stroud, with, you know, whether it be Washington or even the Panthers, you know, taking Bryce Young and elevating him, or Washington elevating whoever they draft. Let's get to some of the super chat real quick. Popcorn Movie says, reference to some Belichick, he says, name a coach that has taken a bad QB to the Super Bowl 6 times. I'll wait. Yeah, that's like, and thinking that you're just going to find a Mr. Irrelevant or a Tom Brady, like, it doesn't happen very often. That's why we make such a big deal about it, right? Willie Doc, again, we appreciate you. He says, is there a candidate that splits the difference between a first-time head coach and a veteran head coach? That sounds like Raheem Morris. Like, you know, somebody who splits the difference between, like, a hot new head coach and then a veteran head coach. Because I think what I like more about Raheem Morris is might be the last of a dying breed in the sense of a CEO-style head coach. Now, the problem that you might run into there is if they start pumping out, you know, good coordinators, and then he's going to have to continuously replace them. Nick Sirianni up in Philadelphia, after their run last year, has to replace them both. Now has to replace them both again for the opposite reason. The team fell apart and somebody had to be the sacrificial lamb for it, you know. Fred Butts, another $2. He says, Houston OC reminds me of Arthur Smith. You'd have to expound on that, because the styles seem different. Now, if you just want to talk about, like, a hot name at the time, you can say that about. The one that reminds me of Arthur Smith more than any of them is Ben Johnson. You know, if you wanted a more seamless transition, somebody else set it up here in chat. I wish I could find. I should have started it when I saw it.
You can literally say that about, like you said, Bobby Slowik, Ben Johnson, about any of these guys.
He said, you know, Ben Johnson would be joining a team that would feel very familiar to him. Like, when I watched Detroit, and maybe you can agree or disagree, or I would like to get your opinion on it. Like, stylistically, they seem to be what Atlanta would have looked like if everything was clicking on all cylinders. Do you agree or disagree with that, Aaron?
I think so. I would agree. I don't see that as a problem, though. Like, Ben Johnson being like Arthur Smith, like, I know why that's a problem to a lot of folks, but, like, that's the type of person that gets head coaching jobs in the NFL. Like, you know, I think their resumes are very similar in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's funny to me because, like, you see all these people that are like, you know, I want the Falcons to hire Ben Johnson, but Arthur Smith was a terrible choice. And it's like, was he, though? Like, it didn't go well. Obviously, we all can agree on that. Like, it didn't go the way we thought it would go. But, like, I don't think that inherently makes Arthur Smith the wrong choice of the coach. It's just, like, things didn't break our way. That's kind of football. You know, like, sometimes the ball bounces against you.
When he was hired, everybody was like, hey, well, yeah, we got the guy. You know, this was the guy that a lot of people wanted as the head coach. We got him. And minus, if you take, you know, this is a big part of it, you take out the production on the field, okay?
Yeah, obviously.
Take out the game day stuff. But if you just talk about the locker room, the kind of, like, the culture, whatever you want to call it, that was built behind the scenes, the stuff that we don't see. Everything that I've heard about that whole situation behind the scenes has been nothing but good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, the guy is, I think he's a really good coach. I think he came into a really bad situation, and just for whatever reason was not able to just wasn't able to make it click. But everything else, just the team building, the getting guys to play hard, getting guys to be prepared most of the time, you saw that last year easily.
There was definitely something going on you know, like teaching wise, because like you can clearly watch it with like spacing and route running, you know, guys ended up in the same places way too close too many times. So there was something going on with teaching that didn't make, that wasn't translating well. But when, you know, when I'm not picking on Nick here, but I see this a lot, like Ben Johnson actually uses his players. My argument to that, and I'm not trying to turn this segment into a defend, you know, Arthur Smith, but you had, again, a tight end that almost broke the NFL record for receiving yards in his rookie season. A, you know, running back who 1,400 yards from scrimmage with almost double-digit touchdowns. And then Drake London beat Julio Jones's reception record for the in a two-year span. So it's hard for me to say that he wasn't using his weapons. Again, it fell apart when we got to the red zone, so we didn't score the points we wanted. But anyway, again, not getting down that rabbit hole again, because that ship has has sailed. GAT says, I would love Joe Brady in Atlanta. Everywhere he's went, the offense has gone ham, except for against the Chiefs this past game. But anyway, he says, if we can get him and McDonald's as the HC, or Bill is the HC, Brady is the OC, and Weaver as the DC. That's, yeah, you start connecting a lot of dots there. But I would be, what are your thoughts on Joe Brady? I know some people really like him, and some people are like nonplussed by him. Aaron, what are your thoughts there?
I'm in a nonplussed group. He's pretty bad to me. I thought, you know, he did a fine job in Buffalo. I wasn't really impressed with anything he did in Carolina. I thought, like, the circumstances that he was handed in Buffalo were great circumstances, but, like, that passing game kind of took a big step back once he took over the offense, in large part because, you know, Stephon Diggs wasn't being used. So speaking of not using your best players, but, like, you know, he was able to compensate somewhat by, you know, focusing on the running game, and their offense became much more of a quote-unquote balanced offense. And certainly I think there's a case to be made that the Bills kind of needed that. But, you know, when push came to shove, like, you needed your, you know, quarterback to kind of do the same things that he had been doing the last couple of years, which is put the team on his back. And I don't think Joe Brady did a whole lot to solve that problem for the Bills. But, you know, he's fine. Like, again, you know, he probably wouldn't be in my top eight in terms of candidates. But, like, you know, anybody but Belichick.
And I'm in the same boat. Like, when people bring up Brady, like, I think he's fine. But again, like, if you go look back at what he did in Carolina, that was like, people were screaming to get him out of there. Like, there was nothing. I mean, no, he had Sam Darnold, you know?
Well, also,
it just didn't, like, he's not shown me anything, even in his stint in Buffalo, that he's ready to be a head coach.
There was a lot of chatter around whether right, wrong, or indifferent. There was a lot of chatter coming out of Carolina that was more Matt Rhule's doing, like holding him back. I was really interested when I heard he was taking over in Buffalo, but like Aaron said, it wasn't necessarily like the offense then became prolific. If anything, he got James Cook involved, but James Cook involved at the detriment of Stephon Diggs, maybe, you know, so who knows? I was more on board with Brady if we had kept Nielsen, you know, because I thought that could be, you know, with the ties to Fontenot, all that jazz. But outside of that, I don't know if I necessarily want Brady as the head coach. Let's see. Kojak Mantucket says, Belichick really sounds like a Band-Aid, and we'll be having the same conversation as soon as he breaks the coaching record, Ben Johnson or Raheem for him. That's the thing, is like, with Belichick's age, like, say we do sign him, like, how long would you give him? Like, what do you think, until he breaks the record, Aaron?
That would be my expectation. You know, he's like about 15 wins away. Yeah, like, he'll stick around for 2 or 3 years, and then who knows at that point in time. And, you know, you talked a little bit, JR, about the Patriot way, and I've sort of touched upon this. And I thought I heard Chase Daniels say something very interesting about that on the Athletic podcast last week, where he was talking to a friend of his that played in New England, and basically that person related it from a culture standpoint of, you know, we worked for Bill, but we played for Brady. And I think that's been a big reason why, without Brady, as some of your viewers have suggested, like, they haven't had the same level of success, because going back to your point, like, Bill doesn't really do a great job relating with today's players. He's an old school sort of guy that, you know, and I understand why some people think that's needed in Atlanta. I don't really think that is. I think that's going to only lead to most of the Falcons star players just being miserable going to work every day. And I just don't think that's a way to build a winning culture in the NFL. If players are like, here we go.
Right, again.
Let's go to this meeting and get chewed out by this coach and, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, I just don't think that's a way to win. And so that to me is why, a big reason why I'm not necessarily in favor of the idea of Bill Belichick, even as a short-term fix. Like, again, I've seen the argument many times, and I don't think there's anything wrong with this argument of like, well, most of these coaches only last 3 years, so why not, you know, go all in on Belichick and maximize those 3 years? But I don't necessarily agree with the opinion that you'd be maximizing that with Belichick over those 3 years, in part due to some of the things that he's done in New England, that if you apply them here to Atlanta, I just think he's just going to kind of not build upon what the Falcons have done, but rather just kind of tear it down. And then he's not going to stick around long enough to rebuild it back up. And I just don't think that's in the best interest of this team long-term.
Yeah. Like, Huckle has a good point here. He's like, whose age is more important, Blank's or Belichick's? I think the owner wants a ring badly, you know, before he, you know, proverbially kicks the bucket, which when you're getting into your 80s is, you know, a realistic topic to have. But, and maybe that's where the split comes, you know, that we've been hearing about with Blank and the rest of the front office.
I think that comes from the fact that whatever, at least what everybody believes, and maybe some people have heard this from some people in the organization, I don't know. I think what you're hearing, the reason why you're hearing that stuff is because if Belichick, or potentially even Harbaugh, either one of those guys comes here, there's probably going to be some people that either lose their jobs, or because maybe they're redundant, or, you know, somebody like Rich McKay, maybe he doesn't lose his job per se, but he maybe, like, they move him, they basically take some of his powers and put him somewhere else, or, you know, say, hey, you're now over here instead, whatever. And, like, from a working professional point of view, I understand why some people would be like, if Belichick comes in here, there's a good chance I'm out of a job, and I really don't want that. So I completely understand, like, if they really like working for the organization, like they've you know, built up all of these relationships, and they really like the environment they work in, do they want that to change? No. But that doesn't, I don't think that is a like indictment of, like, we don't want to work for Belichick because we don't think he's a good coach or anything like that. I think it's more just I'm trying to preserve my position because I really like it here. That's in my brain. That's where I'm thinking of it from, because if I was in a, you know, if I'm at work and my leadership, there's like big changes at the top for leadership, there's, you just never know what's going to happen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Weird stuff could happen, and I could be out of a job. You know, so am I looking forward to that? No, but that doesn't mean that I don't think that person would be potentially a good fit for the company or whatever. It's just I want to keep my job because I like doing my job.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, that's a good transition into the, like, one of the next topics of discussion, which would be the, you know, the McKay thing, right? And I get what I mean by that is, like, you know, the idea that if Belichick comes here, that would clearly mean, you know, McKay would be out of a job. And I made the joke that, all right, folks, you know, who wants to sell their football soul? Do you want, you know, do you want to bring Belichick here so that you can get rid of McKay? And I found it hilarious how many people were like, yeah, bring it on. And I'm sitting there going, What do y'all actually think McKay does day to day that has caused this team to be a failure in your eyes, which I find hilarious? What is your take on the McKay hatred there, Aaron? I'm going to put this banner down so people can see underneath your name.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying this for a while now. Like, I think McKay is basically a scapegoat for whatever people think the issues are with this team. And I think the issues are this team are a multitude, you know, play calling, quarterback play, offensive line play, run game, not having explosive weapons, not having a pass rush, you know, needing more athletes at linebacker, needing better cornerback play, needing better safety play, needing better special teams play. Like, they have the same issues that every football team has that, you know, doesn't have success. But I think it's easy for people to sort of say one person is the cause of all of this.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't think that's how football works. It's a team sport, and you know, you need 11 links in a chain interconnected to succeed on each individual play. And if one link in that chain breaks down, you know, it leads to struggles on a football field. And that's just how the sport is played. But it's just easier for people to say, well, this one link is
that guy.
it's this guy's at fault. And it's sort of this idea of like this trickle down of, you know, McKay is the root of all the problems. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people talk about accountability and the lack of accountability, that he's, you know, in a position where he can make football decisions, but never take any blame for that. And I just go like, I don't think he makes any football decisions. I think he's like pretty much every team president for the most part in this league, outside of maybe Dallas, that those people don't make football decisions, right? They sort of empower the people in the building to make those day-to-day decisions. And like, you know, that's Terry Fontenot, that's Arthur Smith. So if you have an issue with what's going on with the Atlanta Falcons, your issues are probably with those two guys more so than they are with Rich McKay. So, you know, I think Rich McKay's fine. I think the Falcons are fine. Like, again, I think a lot of this sort of backlash, like the Falcons are the worst run franchise and they're terrible and all this, like, they're fine. You know, as I said, like, any objective measure that you can measure wins and losses, you know, being in a position to win Super Bowls, you know, at least making it to the conference championship game, they outperformed most of the league over the last 20 years. And that's why, like, I sit here when people act like this is terrible and everything is wrong with this team and we need to, you know, blow it up and we need to completely change the culture.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's just, it's fine. Like, they just need to be a little bit better. That's all they need to be. Be 10% better. And it's just like, they'll be good.
It's recency bias. Like you said, since Blake has been the owner, we haven't gone this long without a winning season. And I echo that exact same sentiment that you're just bringing up, which is, if you look, like, two out of the three most successful head coaches in franchise history have been hired by Blake and or McKay.
Right. Like, as in, you know, and that's the thing, is like, that's the part that makes me chuckle, is like, it becomes the, like, nameless, faceless evil. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, in any good book, you have, you know, the big bad guy, right? And 90% or 99% of the book, the big bad guy is not even in the story. Like, he's mentioned, he's talked about, but he's not bearing down on you. He's only bearing down on you for, like, such a small part of the story. And that's, like, kind of what I get here, is that you get, like, we want to look at McKay as being the one who is making every single solitary decision. Well, that's not the case. Like, what people have done, what a lot of the fan base has done, it has taken the decisions that we don't like, we lay at the feet of McKay. And here recently, the decisions that we do like, well, obviously that was Terry Fontenot who made that decision. So, you know, it was Fontenot's decision to draft Zach Harrison, but it was McKay's decision to draft Jalen Mayfield. You know what I'm saying? Or it was Fontenot's decision to, you know, sign Jesse Bates, but it was, you know, McKay's decision to not try to trade for Montez Sweat, even though we did try to trade. You see what I'm saying? And, yeah. And I find that to be, like, exhausting in a sense, because in my business, you know, I do construction, and a lot of times you get what's called an owner's rep at the meetings from time to time, right? You have the general contractor, all the other contractors are sitting in a room and talking about the project. And then every now and again, the owner's rep comes in and the owner's rep sits there and he's the mouthpiece for the owner. If you have a question about something, the owner's a busy dude, right? He's out doing billion-dollar deals here, there, and everywhere, and he ain't got time to answer every little question, so he has a rep there. And that's what I quantify Rich McKay as. And because if you drive around Atlanta like I do, like Arthur Blank's name is everywhere. Like I don't think the vast majority of fans realize just how widespread Blank is around Atlanta. I mean, he has multiple office buildings where he conducts business. Like we've, my company has built two or three of them. Jonathan works for a company that was built by him. So he's very influential around this area. And so, yes, the Falcons are a big thing, but they're not his only thing. And they're not even his biggest thing. So that's what Rich McKay's job is to be the mouthpiece of Arthur Blank. And also it helps, at least for Blank, that he's also tied into the committee, you know, the NFL, you know, competition committee, right? So either way, I think people have decided that, okay, obviously the common denominator here is Rich McKay. So he's the problem. And if it's not him, then it's Blank himself is the, obviously the problem. When those
I saw somebody be like, Blank needs to get out of here, you know, like fire, like
fire Blank.
Yeah, we're gonna fire Blank, and I'm like,
good luck with that. I think that's a great analogy, JR, with the construction thing. That's perfect. I think that's basically what he does. I think people are like, he makes the football decisions. Like, no, he doesn't. No. Like, they've said he doesn't really make football. Like, you can't run the day-to-day of an NFL football team checking in two or three times a week, right? You know, like there's so many decisions that have to be made every single day by people in that building, right? That you just can't just show up two or three times a week and basically be like, okay, well, you're going to do this. You're going to sign this guy. You're going to trade this guy. All right. You guys got it. All right. I'm out. And then like, just leave and then come back next week. And then like, that's how, like,
it's not how businesses are run.
If that's how the Falcons ran, like you would hear way more about how dysfunctional this football team is if that's what was happening in that building. And that's not what's happening in this building. And again, I know people are upset because, you know, 6 years of losing.
Right.
And it's, you know, no one is sitting here saying, hey man, just keep doing what you're doing. We all want this team to be better, but like, you know, I think, and I don't know if you guys disagree, I just don't think this team is that far away. They just need to just keep chipping away and get better. And, you know, I don't feel like they have to completely derail or blow it all up just to take a few more steps to getting back to their consistent winning ways that we saw, you know, much earlier in Arthur Blank and Rich McKay's tenure.
McKay is the guy that Terry and Arthur go to if they want to bounce something off somebody. Like, because the guy, whatever you think of him, the guy's been around the league and has been in the league for many, many years. His dad was in the league for many, many years. He knows football both from a player personnel perspective, and he knows football from a business perspective. So if you need advice on, you know, maybe you want to bounce something off somebody who, you know, with that experience, McKay's that guy. And so that's what he was there for. He was there if they needed something to try to get that, you know, help to make their job better or to help, you know, push this team further, they'd go to him. If they needed advice on something or just somebody to talk to about a decision they're trying to make, they could go to him for that. But he was exactly like you said, he's not that guy that's like, we want to draft this guy.
Right.
This is the guy we want.
Don't
worry about this. This is the guy.
He's not. Right. If that was the case, then he would be the general manager. Like, he would be the one doing those deals. Our good friend Damski said he had to report the stream because Aaron was just too handsome. He apologized for having to.
Anyway. He definitely classes this joint up.
That's right.
Say that.
All right, let's see. I'm going to try to get into some some of the folks here in the chat room. See if anybody has okay. Now here's a real question from Damski. He says, your guys' thoughts on flip-flopping defensive schemes or philosophies, however you look at it. I know they're nickel mainly, but too much, you know, cross scheme players. With, like, say you bring in, I guess right now the biggest like elephant would be, you know, Belichick, who runs a primarily 3-4, however you like, how much chalk you want to throw at that. Like, do you think that's was part of my concern about moving off of Smith and company so soon, is like you bring in a new guy, now you're looking at having to retool the roster again. Is that something that has crossed your mind more than once, Aaron?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, a concern. It's not something that I'm super worried about, because I think the league has moved to hybrid fronts and whatnot. And so really the differences in scheme are more about like what your coverage is are. Like, are you a two high look? Are you single high? Do you play man? Do you play zone? Those types of things. I think that's really where the bigger differences will come. And it's interesting because Belichick kind of was like the first coach to kind of build a hybrid scheme in 20 years ago. And it's like, are they a 3-4? Are they a 4-3? You know, what does Willie McGinnis do? Like, sometimes he puts his hand in the dirt, sometimes he stands up. So I'm not too concerned about that specifically, but I think for individual players, like we saw this past year with Ryan Nielsen taking over, you saw a player like D'Angelo Malone get marginalized, right?
Right.
And you wonder a little bit with certain individuals, like if the Falcons move to a different front, you know, would that lead to D'Angelo Malone getting more opportunities in like a 3-4 look? And, you know, what does that mean for someone like a Zach Harrison, right? You know, those types of things. You know, what, you know, Caden Ellis, you know, if he, you know, gets the opportunity, we know Caden Ellis's like strength is rushing the quarterback, right? You know, in a different scheme, would he be more of a pure off-ball linebacker? Would a team move him to edge? Or, you know, would they ask him to not be able to rush the quarterback? Like, those are the sort of questions that I have. I think those are concerns for individual players, but I think overall I'm not sitting here too worried about a new coach coming in and not being able to figure out how to use these guys. We might have a couple of guys that get marginalized like we saw with D'Angelo Malone, but I don't think that's going to like suddenly completely break the defense or whatever. Like, I think the Falcons have, you know, AJ Terrell can work in any scheme. Jesse Bates can work in any scheme. Like, if you're playing a scheme that's not being able to maximize David Onyemata and Grady Jarrett, you're probably running the wrong scheme, you know? So like, you know, I think those are things that the Falcons should be concerned with. But again, it's not something I'm going to lose too much sleep over.
Right.
Yeah, I think gone are the days of like, we run a 3-4 and we have to have very specific types of players to run this 3-4. Well, we run a 4-3 over here, so we have to have very specific type of players. And if you don't have those players, you can't run that defense. Now, if you're running a 3-4, is it more beneficial to you to have the big giant mountain of a man as your nose tackle? Absolutely. Can you get by without having the Vita Veas of the world as your nose tackle? Yeah, you can. It's not going to be maybe quite as
successful. Well, it's interesting that it's interesting that you bring up Vita Vea, right? Cause like that's, you know, Tampa 2, you know, that's more 4-3.
I'm just thinking of like just a big guy.
Yeah, but
you want to put in there. That's the immovable object in the middle of that 3-4 defense.
But whether it's
Vita Vea or
right. But to Aaron's point, you know, I was just listening to, in preparation of possibly, you know, hiring Belichick, I was listening to a podcast where the guy was breaking down, you know, Belichick and Brian Flores, like the 5-0 pressures, the coverages and stuff that they were using off of that. This is from a couple of years ago, but still, you know, is viable because it's part of his tool bag. And, you know, he was bringing up the point where, Belichick is one of the first people to really start doing like man matching stuff, like taking what that player is good at on defense and, you know, using them to that strength. So I don't worry so much about the defense with somebody like a Belichick. Maybe somebody like, if you bring in one of the offensive guys, like who they may hire, may have, you know, less experience as far as being able to work with a whole bunch of different people. You know, Mike McDaniel or Mike McDonald, because here like Plant says, you know, give me Mike McDonald. He's from the Harbaugh coaching tree. As far as like, you know, the hot names, like he's probably like the hottest defensive name, what he's been able to do, you know, with Baltimore's defense against some of the more high powered, you know, high octane offenses this year has been impressive. But my worry anytime we get into that is like, okay, what makes you think that's going to translate here? You know, because that's what we wanted every time you hire one of these coordinators, right? Mm-hmm. let's see. Reggie 2K says, JR, Jonathan, Aaron, I appreciate y'all. Okay, cool. Appreciate you too. Sometimes I pre-read those and sometimes I don't. I saw names and I was like, obviously this is going to be a question. It was not. Fred says, do y'all think we need to go back to the 4-3? It gets to the QB better. Again, debatable on, because like right now, what Baltimore, they have the most sacks and they're primarily a 3-4. You know, so it just is debatable on that. Like, do you have a preference, Aaron, on scheme wise?
No, I think my general philosophy on 4-3 versus 3-4 is historically the benefits of the 3-4 is it's easier to kind of disguise pressures, mm-hmm. right? That like it's easier for you to put seven guys on the line of scrimmage and the offense doesn't know who's coming. And, right. you know, that's kind of the main benefit of the 3-4. That's always kind of been the main benefit of it. But outside of that, but we've seen so many, as I said, like there's so many hybrid fronts that you're seeing so many 4-3 teams. Like before, the only team that was like, I'm showing my age, but like the only team for many years that was a 4-3 team that blitzed a lot was like the Eagles right. under Jim Johnson. And that's the sort of tree that Sean McDermott comes from. But like nowadays, over the last decade, like every, you know, you saw that here in Atlanta with the 4-3. And one of the things that Ryan Nielsen did was run a lot of sort of simulated pressures and all those things. That's been kind of the thing that has kind of taken over the league the last couple of years. And it doesn't really matter what front you use. Everybody's sort of doing all of those sorts of things and finding ways to, you know, put 5-6 guys on the line of scrimmage. That was one of the things that Ryan Nielsen loved to do in this defense, is they would go dime and they'd go, you know, 3-2. Six dime defense, you put five guys on the line of scrimmage, put those two linebackers in the A gaps, and you have no idea who's coming. And they, you know, they would rush certain guys, they drop certain guys. Well, and that's the whole thing that confuses offenses. And I think you can do that in pretty much any scheme nowadays.
And that's the defense's answer to motions, and not answer, but that's the defensive equivalent to, you know, to like motions on the offense, right? Is you have that really just, you know, discombobulated look. So that you can, you know, as you were saying, simulate the pressures. You don't know who's coming, who's dropping, and having guys who can do that well, you end up with a nickel defense being your base. You know, you end up with whether that nickel defense, now the question becomes, is it a nickel or is it like big nickel? Are you doing it with an extra cornerback or an extra safety? Do you treat the safety as more of a linebacker, or are you trying to, you know, cover deep thirds, you know, of the field? So those are like, we won't get into any of that stuff until we obviously get a coach and can start digging into what their, you know, what their tendencies and what their choices are, so to speak. Our good buddies Out of Your Falcon Mind says, might have missed this earlier in the show, but do you guys have favorite candidates? I think we've all pretty much landed on everybody who isn't Belichick at this point. I don't know, Jonathan, like you have like one, I know you kind of said it earlier, but is there one guy that
like that the one, kinda... like if I had to pick one, I'm putting my personal stake for Slowick. Like that's, I think he's you know, a guy, I like the fact that he comes from the, Shanahan / McVay tree, you know, like he's you know, kind of in the LaFleur kind of situation. I like the fact that he was able to, like you said, in one off season, get that connection with his rookie quarterback, and was able to call games, especially as the season went on. Like early in the season, had some hiccups. Probably trying to figure things out, but you saw over the course of the season, you saw that progress go from, let's try this. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, let's try this. That worked, but then this doesn't work. You know, just figuring it out a lot. And by the time you got to the end of the season, they were cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it like and even when they lost their best weapon on offense, and they still kept cooking. You know, so it wasn't like they just had otherworldly athletes everywhere. They lost some guys, and they were still going. So seeing him do that, that's who I would do. I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. If we hire Bill Belichick, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, man, we're a trash organization. We're this, you know, whatever. Like, at the end of the day, I want to win. If Bill Belichick comes in, Super Bowl or not, a lot of people will be like, well, if it's Belichick, it's got to be Super Bowl. But, like, if you get us back to winning, get us, you know, we're win a game or two in the playoffs, at least be in that conversation every year or a good chunk of the time. If we can get back to that and Bill Belichick does it, I don't care. If it's Mike McDonald, I don't care. If it's Slowick, if it's any of the guys, if it's Raheem Morris, like, I don't care. I want to win. So give me whoever is going to be the best chance for us to win, the sooner the better. And I will be a happy man.
Yeah. Like, I've been on record, you know, some folks have accused me of crying about it on Twitter. I'm on record saying, you know, I'm not a fan of bringing Belichick in here. I think that it's would be like flipping the table on everything that you're building towards right now in a way that I don't think would be positive and I don't think is needed. You know, you have a lot of young pieces on offense. If, you know, if you feel like Mike McDonald has the answers with an offensive coordinator, whatever, so be it. I don't think that Belichick does, especially if that means bringing in Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. Like, I don't. Now,
Matt Patricia, I'll agree with you on. Don't want him touching anything on this team. Josh McDaniels coming in as an OC. You don't have to like him as a head coach. He's done horrible twice as a head coach. Okay. As an OC, he is one of the best OCs that has been in this league in at least the last decade. At least.
Yeah.
I mean, flat out. I mean, he took Mac Jones to the playoffs. Like.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you that. I still don't necessarily, it doesn't do anything to really like, ruffle, like get me going, like, or get me inspired. Like you, well,
and the other thing with McDaniels is under him, it was him and Belichick and Brady. They all had some input on this.
Mm-hmm.
Under their leadership, I saw them on multiple occasions, like literally from one week to the next, completely change what they do as a team and how they win a game. They could go into one game and be like, okay, we're going to have to air this out because this team is really good against the run or whatever, right? So we're going to have to air this out. And they all got together and created a game plan and executed it to perfection and beat the hell out of a team by throwing it 45, 50 times in that game. They turned around the very next week against a team that's really good. Maybe it was going to be snowy or it was going to be rainy or whatever. And they were like, okay, passing game, whatever. They created a game plan, ran it down the throats of probably, you know, it was a team that was really good against the run, and they just ran it down their throats the whole game, and they won that way. I have seen that team and that combination of head coach and OC, along with Tom Brady, put together game plans to win. Put together game plans in almost every imaginable way. So if you want to sit there and tell me, like, I don't want McDaniels because he's been a bad head coach, okay, fine. As an OC, being able to game plan and put together stuff, especially with Bill Belichick, and if you can get the right quarterback in there, that combination, if they can do that same thing for us, I'm down for it. Right. But at the end of the day, like, I saw them morph into so many different types of teams to win on offense over the years that it's not even fun. Whereas most teams, it's like, we're good at this, we're going to do this, and if we do this, we're going to win. If we're not able to do this, we lose.
Mm-hmm.
They morphed so many times, it was crazy.
Well, I mean, because they, you know, they had practice film on their opponents and were cheating their asses off.
I mean, it all came down to that little bit less air in that ball made everything possible.
Look, hey, look, you go back and listen to some of them players talk about McDaniel's time in Denver when they basically they figured out that he was, you know, getting practice film on their opponents, and that was why they were so prepared, you know. But King 7 has an interesting thought. He says, head coaches are cool, but unless it's an offensive juggernaut with plenty of weapons like Mike and the 49ers, it's about QB play. So look at the playoffs. So on a like separate topic, Aaron, what do you think the play is this coming year at QB?
I don't know.
Do you think that solely like depends on
who the coach is?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm not as big on Belichick as Jonathan said. It's like, you know, he's a good coach. Like I can't sit here and argue against the idea that he's somehow a bad coach. I just think the way that they sort of have conducted themselves in New England is not necessarily the way that I want this team to move forward. And you look at, like, I think a lot of people look at the quarterback position as one of those things. Like, you probably the best path for the Falcons to get a good quarterback is to probably trade up in the draft. Well, guess what? The Patriots never do. They never trade up in the draft. They traded up three times in like, you know, 24 years of Belichick running the show. And more than likely that path is going to be signing a veteran and drafting a quarterback on day two. And we'll see who they sign. But, you know, I know a lot of people are hopeful that it's going to be like someone like Kirk Cousins, but you know, I'm a little more skeptical of that than that. I think it's more likely to be Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, some other combination. So that's part of the reason why, like, I'm just like, that doesn't move me in the ways that it might move some people. And so we'll see how it all plays out. But I think with the Falcons at the quarterback position, I feel like they're almost certainly going to sign somebody and draft somebody. It's just a question of how much are they willing to spend on the player that they're going to sign.
Yeah. Like which priority, like is the capital, whether it's money or draft capital, is it put towards the draft or is it put towards, you know, free agent? Because I heard a report today, something about like Belichick wanted to move off of Mac Jones and was really intrigued by Baker Mayfield, who is, you know, potentially a free agent at the end of this season in Tampa. So, you know, we automatically go for like pairing him with Kirk Cousins because of Cousins' comments about he wouldn't turn down playing for Belichick, but it could be just as likely that you have, you know, Baker Mayfield playing here, who had a good season this past season, but it goes back to the thought process, is that Dave Canellis, or is that, you know, or is it a good combination of a working relationship? So Willie gives us tipped us $2, which we appreciate. He says, who you got for the Super Bowl? My vote is Lions versus Chiefs. Well, my dream of Lions versus Bills came to an end this weekend. Yeah. I was really hoping for at least one fan base to end their misery. Yeah. So I will go with Lions and Ravens. With, I don't know, probably Ravens winning. I think they're too complete of a team. So maybe that's – what do you think, Aaron?
If I'm predicting, it'll probably be Ravens 49ers, and I'll pick the Ravens. But like you, I was rooting for the Bills, and because Patrick Mahomes once again ripped out my, you know, heart with that, wanting, you know, the Bills to do something. Like, I can't root for him this week, you know. Just like I need Mike McDonald to shut him down, and you know, then we can start really talking about, hey, is Mike McDonald a young Belichick?
There it is.
A week from now. And I'm rooting for the Lions for the same reason, you know.
Right.
So some team needs to get the monkey. If the Falcons aren't going to be that team,
somebody's got to show that the Falcons can. What do you think, John?
At this point, what I want to, you know, I'll give what I want, what I think will happen. What I want to happen is Lions Ravens. I don't want to see Mahomes in the Super Bowl again. I'm tired of him. He's a great player, great quarterback, but at the same time, it's kind of the same way that I feel about Joe Montana. Like, I don't sit there and say like that guy's not a good quarterback. He was a great quarterback. Cannot stand him as a player. Could not, will not, whatever. Mahomes is kind of in that same. He's starting to get to that same like Brady era, and I'm just like,
six AFC championships in a row. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's starting to easily become the next. Yeah. King says like Mahomes is turning into Brady. Yes. Because he's not on our team. You know, if we were Chiefs fans, you'd be like, oh, that's the greatest student in the world. Yep. But because he's not, you know, we are all definitely.
But I would love to see Ravens, Lions. I think their defense is probably just a little bit too much for Kansas City. So I think they'll be in there from the AFC side. As much as I want the Lions to be there, I'm just not sure they got enough I think likely the 49ers came out this past weekend and they had the week off trying to get some of that knock some of the rust off and stuff like that. Now they're coming back off of they're back in their routine. They got that week to prepare. They're getting prepared. And I think that defense is probably going to come out looking a lot better than it did last weekend. And likely going to be able to hamper Detroit. So I think 49ers will be there against the Ravens. I think that the Ravens will probably beat the 49ers, but they got some weapons over there in San Francisco, and their defense is not too shabby. So you'd have probably the two best defenses and two of the best offenses in the league going against each other. So
it should be a good show. MJ, finally something I can get behind. He says, I blame Rich McKay for not drafting Patrick Mahomes. That's it. Finally. See,
who did we draft that year in 2017? What's that?
2017? Was that the McKinley?
So we would have never had a shot.
That was never. You're right.
Yeah.
We would have never had a 2017. That was.
Hold on, I'm looking it up.
That was McKinley.
That was the year after the Super Bowl, right? So we would have had like the 31st or whatever pick. So we would have never been in any kind of position to draft him, I don't think.
Yeah. We traded up for Tack. We should have traded up for Mahomes. So, yeah, Rich McKay.
That's down right.
Get him out. Absolutely.
Blaming Rich McKay.
Absolutely.
No, we should have selected TJ Watt. But anyway, no. I remember doing a video that year. I will never. Anyway. Alberto, JR, he says, that's the only one in recent. He was talking about, like, hot names that won the Super Bowl. I said McKay. That was the one I could think of. So, let's see. Let's take a few. See if there's any actual questions going on here. Oh, no. If that's the case, no, I'm good. He says Morris for HC, Leftwich for OC. No, I'm good.
I'm down with the head coach.
I'm OC down with Morris. That's fine. You know, you
keep Leftwich now.
Leftwich out of here. He should have taken that Jags job. At least Hard secured passed. Himself. Yeah, he should at least have secured himself a bag, if nothing else. Anyway. All right. Well, I think that's probably about it for us. We pretty much covered everything. Hopefully we'll hear something soon. Go ahead.
I actually have a question for Aaron. This kind of goes off of what you think will happen in as far as at the quarterback position. I'll ask you two questions. If you were to say, if we were to sign a vet, who would be your top choice for vet QB? If we decide to go, like JR said, if we decide to, like, we're going to put the capital towards the draft and we go to draft a quarterback, who would be your top pick in the draft and also your top vet pick if we went that direction?
You know, my QB1 at this point is Caleb Williams, so he would be my clear-cut choice there. I don't think there's really much of a chance that the Bears are going to trade out of that pick all the way to 8. Maybe they trade out to number 2 because Washington – wants to get the hometown kid. That's what Caleb Williams, that's where he grew up in DC. And they give them, you know, the bag to move up one spot, and Bears are like, okay, we'll settle for Drake May at number 2. I think Drake May is the clear cut.
You're convinced that Chicago is going to move off a field.
I've been wrong before. I sat here a year ago saying there's no chance that the Ravens are going to not put the exclusive franchise tag on Lamar Jackson. They put the non-exclusive tag on Lamar Jackson. So I've been wrong before. It happens once or twice a year. You know, I get something wrong
again.
But I would be that would be the most shocking thing if the Bears stuck with Justin Fields. That would be the most shocking thing I've seen happen in the NFL in probably like a decade. So I think they're going to take a quarterback. I think, you know, for me, it's Caleb Williams. There's a little drop off to Drake May. And then there's a bigger drop off from Drake May to Jaden Daniels. So, and then there's a bigger drop off from Jaden Daniels to, I think JJ McCarthy's probably going to be my QB4. I'm leaning, I haven't decided yet on him or Michael Penix right now. You know, I've not been the biggest fan of Michael Penix, but I just watched the national championship game and I was like, okay, he was a little bit better than I thought he was. And so maybe I'm willing to move him up a little bit more. So I haven't figured that out, but, to me, like I can't really answer your question from the veteran standpoint, because like, I kind of think the best course of action is for the Falcons to get one of these quarterbacks in the draft. And I frankly don't really care who the veteran is. It's just like, you just signing a guy just to keep the seat warm for a year, kind of in the Marcus Mariota sort of vein. And I guess for me, like, you know, I think ideally Kirk Cousins would be the best option if you want to be able to win now. So I guess if I had to pick one person that's going to be available, that would be my best bet, because I think he can come in and potentially win games for you and put this team in playoff condition, probably more so than one of these rookies would. But if you're not getting Kirk Cousins, you know, I'm not the world's biggest Justin Fields guy. I feel like he's just kind of at best an average NFL starter, which, again, you can argue is an upgrade over what the Falcons have, but in Desmond Ridder. But I don't think it's as big an upgrade as some people think it's going to be. So for me, I just kind of think, like, you know, go out there and sign like a Tyrod Taylor or Jacoby Brissett, and, you know, just keep the seat warm until whoever you draft is ready to play.
I think for me, on like for that one, my concern, and this is akin to helmet scouting, and I know this is bad on my part, but I haven't gotten to the point where I'm diving deep in yet. But the thing that scares me about Caleb Williams is the Lincoln Riley system, and seeing Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray in the NFL, their transitions haven't been like as smooth. And so coming out of that system, that kind of concerns me. Also, it seems like I tend to worry about a guy who's one of the only ways he's able to move the ball downfield, so to speak. And this is where I haven't dug deep enough in, so I can't say definitive, but where most of his stuff comes off script, and that's fine. That's an ability and a talent that you need, but I also need you to be able to, like, more times than not, operate within the structure of the, you know, of the offense. So, I'm pretty sure most of that will be dissuaded, like, once I dig in more. I think a guy like, you know, I don't know if we'll get up into the Drake May, Caleb Williams stratosphere. So then it comes down to like Jaden Daniels and Penix and Bo Nix and McCarthy and any of those, like out of those guys, I like Jaden Daniels. I've watched more of his games, so albeit I'm more biased towards that as of right now, but I'm with you on the veteran side. Like, outside of Kirk Cousins, who at this junction of his career, we know what he is. He's a good quarterback. He's above average, but is he good enough to get you to the promised land in a year or two? That's debatable. So it's either him or, you know, Mayfield, or, you know, whatever you think that Justin Fields might be. I know he's a hot button name, so to speak, because he's polarizing, especially being, you know, from Atlanta area, hometown kid, went to Georgia, all that stuff. He brings a lot more baggage with him than on field play. And so it makes it interesting. I think I'd rather swing for the fences and try to get Caleb Williams than be saddled with that baggage. But yeah. So what's the answer to your own question, Jonathan? If it's a rookie, who you going for? If it's a vet, who you going for?
I mean, if it's a vet and we're talking, I'm trying to get a vet to come in to win now, then I think it's Kirk Cousins. Like, that's the guy that you got to go after. If you're looking like, I want to win now, maybe have another guy come in for 2-3 seasons. If you do that, then maybe, you know, as much as I like you know, the Caleb Williams and the Drake Mays and the Jaden Daniels of the world. We've heard this all before. Like, you can't miss out on this class.
You can.
There will be another class next year. There will be guys coming out of that class that some people are going to look at like, this is the guy. You can't miss on this guy. And the next year and the next year and so forth and so forth. Now,
just like Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. If you're going to pick a guy as a vet this year, it has to be Cousins. If you're going to go that route, and then you can start looking at, okay, now we don't have to worry about maybe you pick up a Bo Nix in the second round. I don't know, you know, whatever. But then you can look at, okay, what is one of the things that we've been clamoring for? Now you go get your edge guy, maybe, you know, one of the elite edge guys at the top of the draft. You go get one of those guys potentially, you know, instead of your quarterback. And then you start filling out the rest of the draft with some skill position players, get some speed on the offense, especially at the wide receiver position, and then go from there. If we're going to go the rookie route, I mean, personally, the guy that I've personally seen, and I haven't dug into a lot of the people, but like the guy I've seen the most of, and the guy that has impressed me the most is Jaden Daniels. I think that guy, especially if you're looking for the guy that can talk, that can throw it down the field accurately, like that's the guy to get. And he moves really well. The only kind of slight thing that I'm going to say, like, is a con is just the slight build. But I think he can fill that out somewhat with NFL trainers and what have you, without necessarily losing all the speed. He might lose some. But I mean, even if he loses a little bit, he's still faster than most of the quarterbacks out there. You're not going to get another Vic out there anytime soon. So as long as he runs like a 4.6, 4.7, he's going to be fast enough to do what he needs to do.
He's going to run faster than that.
Oh yeah.
But at the end of the day, he will be fast enough to do what needs to be done. I really like I've seen him make plays in structure, out of structure. I've seen him run the ball effectively. Now he's got to learn to protect himself a little bit better than he has done at the college level, because you do some of that same stuff at the pro level, you're going to be the next RG3. So you got to do that. But, like, he's my guy that I would want to go up and get. If we were to get a Caleb Williams or Drake May, I'm not going to sit here and be like, how dare you?
That's all ruined.
Exactly. But Jaden Daniels is probably the guy that I would want to see in the Falcons uniform.
I missed this earlier and I feel bad. He says, Andrew Bato says, hello, PVP. I guess we're player versus player over here. says family says, hello, Aaron. Really enjoy both your content. By the way, I hope we land Vrabel as a head coach. That one's interesting. Like Vrabel. It's funny to hear Falcons fans say that, especially after having 3 years of Arthur Smith of the game plan being, let's just try to keep it close and win it at the end. Like, that's Vrabel. Like, he likes those dirty, muddy, muddy games, so to speak. I would figure that the fan base would be wanting to hard swing and go towards like explosive, fun, Mike McDaniels, you know, type play style. So it's going to be interesting for sure. If nothing else, it at least has given us something more to talk about than listening to people whine and complain about another offseason of Arthur Smith, I guess. So I'm appreciative of that. So I think that's going to do it for us today. Aaron, you want to tell folks where they can find you?
Yeah. When I'm not running the meetings at the Rich McKay Fan Club, you can check me out on Locked On Falcons daily on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts, getting my thoughts on the ongoing coaching search. Right now, we're in the midst of breaking down each position group from 2023, looking at the offense. Next week, I'll be down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl talking probably about several quarterbacks and receivers and pass rushers that can help this team. And then the week after that, we'll be looking back at the defense. So that's what's going on in Locked On Falcons.
Good deal.
Well, hopefully by then we'll have a head coach.
Hopefully.
Well,
I figure they'll hire a head coach while I'm on a plane coming back from Mobile.
That makes sense. That seems to be about how that would work. Yeah. We'll try to get you back on after that to get your thoughts, since I'm not able to make it down there. I'm trying to have Kevin on as well. Are you going to be palling around with him down there?
Yeah, probably not as much as I was last year, just because I didn't know what I was doing last year because it was my first year, and I was basically right. Like, Kevin, I don't know what I'm doing. Help me. But, you know, I have a little bit of a clue this time, so I'll definitely be hanging out with Kevin, but probably not nearly as much, because I think, JR, you probably could confirm that we were kind of attached at the hip last year.
Yeah,
so like, don't leave me. I don't know what I'm doing.
I don't know where I am. This place is scary. I thought I heard a banjo over there. You go too far away from that stadium, you go too far away, and you're going to hear a banjo, that's for sure. Well, either way, we appreciate y'all joining in with us tonight. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
For the folks asking, where is Toby? He has decided to, 2024 was new year, new him. He's decided to go do his own thing. He's had a lot of changes in his life. And so he's started up a solo show of his own accord. So if y'all want to go check him out, you can find him on Twitter. It's the same Twitter handle, Toby1991. So if y'all want to figure out what he's thinking about, he's doing his own deal as well. So we appreciate y'all. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.